Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio. Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to the Indie Prime podcast on IndieLive.radio. This is part two of the chat with David McGuinness. David, what's your thoughts, knowledge regarding the different constitutional arrangements in Scotland and England?
Well, it's a fascinating story, and it goes back to the first subject we spoke about, and that was the Court of Session rulings and the shockwaves that sent across the UK. Constitutional arrangements in Scotland and England are, we'll start with the basics, and the basics are that in Scotland the people are sovereign, and in England the people are subjects of the Crown. And this goes way back, all the way back. We'll go back as far as 1066 and William the Conqueror.
Right.
And, of course, we all know about that because even in Scotland, that was a big part of the history that we get taught at school. There was no Scottish history at school except for a wee short session about spiders.
Oh, dear.
You know, William Wallace and, try again, that sort of thing. But if we go back as far as 1066, when William the Conqueror took over and wanted to consolidate his power in England, back in real feudal days, he went to the City of London, which is interesting because we were talking about tax havens earlier. He went to the coffee houses in the City of London to borrow money to consolidate his position as the king. And that's when the City of London, or the 6 square mile as it's known, became a city-state within the state. And ever since then, even the Queen has to ask permission to enter the city, because it's no part of the United Kingdom. Now, if we fast forward a wee bit, because we'll get to the Scottish history part shortly, to the Magna Carta. My understanding of the Magna Carta, because it's what the English Parliament's based on, and it's what we put up with from Westminster. No matter whether you're English, Welsh, or Scottish, Northern, the Irish, because at that time, you know, the Irish was separate again, but at the same time, it was there for the picking. And we fast forward to Magna Carta. The system that was decided in England at that time when they wanted to bring the crown to heel, the power was handed to the barons, you know, and the barons and the knights got a greater say, but the people got nothing. There was no major change like there was in Scotland in 1320 when Malcolm transferred his power, I believe it's Malcolm, transferred his power, his sovereignty, from himself to the people. Of course, he had to petition the Pope in order to be able to do that, because kings and queens are anointed by God. So how do you transfer that anointment to a people? And that's a good question.
Yeah.
So the debate raged in Europe, especially Spanish and the French, especially. And the debate raged for 3 years. And that's why it took to 1323 to get that international recognition that the people of Scotland were sovereign. And of course, the treaty and the laws were passed in Scotland. The treaty was lodged in the then international power, which was Rome. And so we have the Declaration of Arbroath as an international treaty where the sovereignty was transferred to the people, and it gave the Scottish people the right to dispose of a king or a queen and replace them with somebody who would best serve the people of Scotland. And that tradition has went on in Scotland ever since. It's recognised UK-wide, or Great Britain-wide, that the people of Scotland are sovereign. Now, it was we'll fast forward, especially for the Scottish party, because it's really quite important. We'll fast forward to McCormack versus the Lord Advocate in 1953. And when the judgment was handed down, what was said at the time by the High Court in England, which was the highest court at the time, there was no Supreme Court, it was the highest court in England at the time, and what was pointed out was that the people, there are two constitutional arrangements in the United Kingdom, We're only talking about England and Scotland here because, of course, the other parts are no kingdoms, right? Wales is a principality and Northern Ireland's a province.
Yep.
So what was pointed out was that in the United Kingdom, there were two constitutions and both were legal and both were recognised. And the judgment was that in Scotland, there is political sovereignty and the idea of parliamentary sovereignty is a purely English idea. And no such conditions exist in Scotland. Fast forward to the Maggie days and Robin Cook, when he threatened to take Scotland over the bridge with his Labour MPs because of the situation with Margaret Thatcher, and he had all the MPs or the Labour MPs re-sign the Claim of Right. Now the SNP didn't sign the Claim of Right at that time. The SNP MPs that were there didn't sign the Claim of Right at that time because they recognised the Claim of Right as being theirs. They didn't need to verify it. It was already enshrined in Scots law.
Yep.
And it is enshrined in Scots law. We talked about the Act of Savo earlier. You know, like he who will sue the crown. Right, so... And then once again, the Scottish Parliament opened in 1999... The Claim of Right was embedded once again in Scots law in that Parliament. And then, of course, if we fast forward to where we are today, now we'll go back to the English side of things, and we go from the Magna Carta to today, and nothing has changed for the people in England. Parliamentary sovereignty in England is also a farce, and that's why Brexit's a farce. Now, why do I say parliamentary sovereignty in England's a farce? Well, it's actually, if you look at all the official documents, it's the Crown's sovereignty in Parliament. It's not parliamentary sovereignty. Because if you go back to the deal done between Victoria and the Parliament to hand the power off to Parliament to do the day-to-day running of what was then the UK, what Victoria did was she lent the Parliament her sovereignty in exchange for using the Exchequer as a piggy bank. Now, these documents are all there to be read.
Yeah.
You can Google them. You can read these things. So, actually, the sovereignty was never transferred to the Parliament. It's only loaned to them. And in fact, we've had this, it was on the television the other night, you know, where they talked about every 5 years, you know, the people have a vote and then the Crown goes back and they lends the Parliament the sovereignty for another 5 years. And we have seen it with something called the Royal Prerogative. Right, now Boris Johnson has just sideswiped the Crown by lying to her to get her to prorogue Parliament. And that was done with royal prerogative. In other words, she has the power to walk into that Parliament and dissolve it at any point in time. That was part of the deal that was done with Victoria. If Queen Elizabeth or one of her successors decides that they want to take it back under their control, they have the power to walk in there. I mean, if we looked at the ceremony for proroguing Parliament, three officers of the Crown and Black Rod, four officers of the Crown. And they had to trot across the road to the House of Lords and ask the Lords if they could shut Parliament. And the Lords, through the feudal system and the fact that they take the direction state for the Crown, said, "Aye, go ahead, prorogue Parliament." So there is no really any parliamentary sovereignty. The sovereignty of the Westminster Parliament is borrowed for the Crown, and it's allowed by the Crown, and it's only allowed for short periods of time. Hence, we have elections.
Right.
You know, the people go and vote for some people. The biggest party then goes troops of Lanky Buckingham Palace and says, "Well, we're the biggest party. Do you mind if we run the country?" And she's got a gear blessing. Every single law that's passed has to go for royal assent.
Yep.
Now, have you ever heard of something called the spider letters?
No.
Well, I would Google the spider letters, and that's where it was revealed that Prince Charles had been dabbling in politics. And the spider letters, which there was a D note slapped on them, and the Telegraph couldn't print them because it would have blown the whole parliamentary sovereignty thing out of the water, revealed that the Crown, quite regularly, refuses royal assent for things.
Oh.
I believe in the David Cameron term, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm sure of that Parliament, 330 bills were knocked back.
Really?
Really.
That's news to me, and I'm sure that'll be news to many of our listeners.
Well, as I say, there was a D note slapped on the spider letters, but you can Google the spider letters even right now, and you will find out that it was Prince Charles and Darwin and what was going on in Whitehall and what was going on in Parliament directly. In fact, they can bypass Parliament. If you look at all the permanent secretaries in the civil service, there are lots. You know, they can be bypassed. Parliamentary sovereignty, or the sovereignty of the Westminster Parliament, is a sham.
Yeah.
Brexit was set on a sham. And if we've been watching what's been going on and paying attention to what's going on, we can see it's a sham.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's move back the way to Scotland again. And we have a look at the Scottish Parliament. I mean, Her Majesty the Queen and Charles were up here about a month and a half ago. 6 weeks ago, for the 20th anniversary. And she was talking about how the Scottish Parliament had now become the centre of Scotland, of Scottish life. And that Westminster was secondary to the people of Scotland. We don't really notice it until they start impinging on us. And during that ceremony, Patrick Harvey slapped the Queen a doozy. And a lot of people missed it. But if you watch it back, you will find that Patrick said the sovereign people of Scotland, and you could see Charles and the Queen visibly wince. The Queen took it better than Charles did.
Wow.
You could see the expression. And you can go back and you'll see it in the Parliament channel. I mean, Charles was he was looking daggers.
Yep.
The Queen just put on a wee smile.
Yep.
But to say she took it better than Charles did, because he's the next one to take the crown, so there's a problem.
Yeah.
So when we talk about the different constitutional arrangements, England has a supreme leader, and the people are subject to that supreme leader. Scotland doesn't have a supreme leader. What we have in the Queen is the same as the other Commonwealth countries have in the Queen. It's a head of state, nothing more, nothing less. No right to dabble. No right to give royal decrees, none of that stuff. So when we talk about what happened, what happened yesterday with Joanne Cherry, that was basically the courts overturning a royal decree. There's no other part of the UK that can do that. That can only be done in Scotland. So when the boy for the Sun put out his tweet saying there was a reason why that was taken to the Scottish courts, of course there was, because a royal decree could be overturned in the Scottish courts. Now, the Gina Miller case... If you look at the Gina Miller case with John Major, the High Court was shut. And what's being put out in the mainstream media is the reason why Joanne Cherry and them brought that to the Scottish courts was because the High Court was in recess. Rubbish. Gina Miller and John Major recalled, because he's a lord, he recalled the High Court for that to be heard. He recalled it. Anybody could have... They could have recalled it to hear this case in England. The case wasn't going to be heard in England. Because England can't overturn its supreme ruler. So when we talk about the different constitutional circumstances in Scotland and England, that's it done. If you want to nail it down, it's simple as that. The people in Scotland are sovereign. The Queen's the head of state. It's a head of state that can be deposed by the people at any point in time, and another person selected and put in that position, the head of state, that would best serve the needs of Scotland. And it's become close. As I said earlier, I mean, Ian Blackford's been making that threat in Parliament. To my recollection, he's done it 3 times in the last 3 months. And that's the difference. The Queen's a selected head of state here who can be deposed. In England, she can't be. She's the supreme leader. And parliamentary sovereignty is lent to the Parliament by her and can be taken back by her at any point in time. Go and Google the deal done between Victoria and the Parliament. You won't get anything official from the Houses of Commons, and you won't get anything official for the libraries in the House of Commons, because, after all, that's going to be wrapped up in secrecy. But the story's there to be read, you know, and the deal was quite simple. I'll let you run the place day to day, but I'm still keeping my paws in the Treasury. What's that? Mm-hmm. You know, so when we talk about the different constitutional arrangements, that's exactly what we talk about. You know, 1953 and the Lord Advocates pass it to Lord Advocate versus McCormick, and the High Court in England came out in McCormick's favour.
Why was that?
It was a tobacco bill that was going through.
Right.
And they, obviously, things were different. So the different arrangements in Scotland and England meant that McCormick didn't like what was going through. He challenged it, and it was pointed out that, you know what, Scotland doesn't have to, but this doesn't have to apply. Now, if we fast forward to the AXA case, which was referred to the Supreme Court, and the judgment in that case was kept very, very quiet. This was the asbestos case. Are you aware of it?
No.
Okay. The Scottish Parliament decided that the insurance companies were going to cough up. They were going to pay the people who...
Asbestosis,
right?
Yeah.
So, of course, the insurance companies didn't want to do that. So AXA took them to the Supreme Court. They went to the Court of Session first. The Court of Session said, no, I'm sorry, you're going to pay. So they took them to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court looked at the case and went, sorry, we don't have authority over Scots law. You'll do what your bloody will tell.
Yeah.
And so the insurance companies paid it.
Right.
And recently, the case came up again last year because they decided that their wives, who developed asbestosis for cleaning their clothes and things like that, who weren't the entitled before, the insurance companies were going to cough for them and all. And of course, there was no point in taking it to the Supreme Court because the Supreme Court judgment was quite simple. We can't overturn Scots law. Which brings us to what's going to happen next Tuesday when the Supreme Court ruling for the Court of Session goes in front of the Supreme Court on the judgment that the prorogation of Parliament was illegal. Now, by rights, that's Scots law. And there's only three Scots law lords sit in that Supreme Court. So it should only be by rights heard by those three, because they're the only three who have the competence to make judgment on Scots law. But because there were simultaneous cases in Northern Ireland, which is Irish law, and in England, which is English law, and both those cases were thrown to the wind, I imagine that all 13 judges will sit. And I would imagine that they will overturn the judgment of the Scots Supreme Court, which will lead us to a further constitutional crisis, and it will lead us into territories that you and I are well aware that they have never dared to go before.
No.
Because there's three things that are sacrosanct. You named them earlier, I'll let you go again. Three things that are sacrosanct.
Education.
Yep.
Religion.
Yep.
The legal system.
Correct. These are sacrosanct and they have not to be touched. I mean, the trade treaty
For the listeners' benefit, these are the sacrosanct from the Union.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's areas where Westminster and the Union cannot dabble and have never dared to dabble. The education one, well, they had control of that under the Scotland office, so that one's a wee bit... You know, they could say they weren't dabbling in it because it was under the control of the Scotland office, but actually, we know that this education that we had here in Scotland bypassed Scottish history and things like that. We were basically taught British history as part of the Great British Project, mm-hmm. to deal with all our individual identities.
Yeah.
Now that the Scottish Parliament has control of education, we're starting to see that Scottish history, you have to actually opt to take it, but it's back on the curriculum. And I would imagine as time goes on, the Scottish Parliament, if it survives, because that's a big if it survives, I would imagine that Scottish history will come more to the fore, especially recent history.
Yeah. What, any comments on the threat to the Holyrood?
No, not really. There is a threat there, but you've got to remember that in 2013 they told us what they would do, and closing the Scottish Parliament wasn't part of it. What they said, and it was Ian Davison, the Labour Party, was an MP for the Labour at the time, what he said was, once we win this referendum, all that will be left today is bayonet the wounded, and then we'll strip that many powers for the Scottish Parliament to be as well sitting in a pub. We'll turn that into a county council. And that's what that will be the route they'll go down, because to actually shut the Scottish Parliament without emergency powers, that's a different matter. To shut the Scottish Parliament, there would be riots. 76% of the population support the Scottish Parliament, 76% of the population look at the Scottish Parliament as being the seat of democracy in Scotland.
I think a lot more than that now. That was at the time when we were voting for it. I think you'd probably find there'd be a lot more now in favour.
Well, recent polls have it a wee bit higher, but you know, obviously you have to take in the hardline unionist point of view, people who are British and British alone, and we see that in the social... the studies that they do every year, you know, every 5 years, I think it is at the moment, or maybe every 10 years, where they ask people how they feel about nationality and things like that, where 76% of people in Scotland felt only Scottish. You know, I think in Wales it was about 50%, and in Northern Ireland it was about 50%, and in England it was very low. You know, as we were talking earlier, it seems to be that England's national identity is fluid. The Great British Project has had a bigger burn in England than it has everywhere else. I don't think we could disagree with that, you know.
Yeah.
And we see that especially at things like sports events in England, where the Union Jack's flown as often as the St George's Cross. It seems to be totally interchangeable there. So that's the constitutional arrangements and the differences in the constitutional arrangements. The people of Scotland are sovereign. It's always been the elephant in the room. And it's always been a check and balance on Westminster. I think the fact that the people in England were unaware of Scots law and the fact that it was equal to English law was earth-shaking. And I think the fact that the English people are now looking and saying, whoa, hold on a minute, for the last umpteen million years you've been telling us it's British law. Where's this British law now? How can these so-called they were calling them Mickey Mouse courts, you know. And as I say, that's down to the constitutional arrangements. That's exactly what the difference is. Doesn't matter where you come from, the minute you come and settle here, you become a sovereign Scot. You know, your rights are the same no matter which part of the world you come from. Doesn't matter if you come from England, Wales, Northern Ireland, Japan, India, whatever. When you come here, you have exactly the same rights as any other Scot, and you are no subject to anything other than the law.
Mm-hmm.
And our courts, as I say, were set up by an Act of Parliament, and they're not royal courts. And that's for a reason. Because the Crown has no place in our legal system. It has none. And that's a big, as I say, these are big constitutional differences within. They have just come to the fore, and they have just shaken the whole of these islands. It's shocked a lot of people. And the fact that they were being forced on mainstream media to actually report the fact that Scots law was equal and sacrosanct in Scotland. But as I say, we are heading towards a huge constitutional clash, and the two different areas, or the two different constitutional settlements in Scotland and England, are headed for a huge clash next week on Tuesday. And it will be interesting.
But David, what's your thoughts on the independence movement and where we are at the moment, and also the mandate that the Scottish Government have?
The independence movement's growing daily. We all know that. The polls are starting to show it as well. Lord Ashcroft's last poll was showing the movement was definitely from no to yes, and the pace of that as Brexit is getting nearer and nearer and nearer, is it? It's accelerating. Mm-hmm. So that's good. That's good.
Yep.
The march is very popular and getting bigger. Hopefully, the SNP, which is the political wing, really, of the independence movement, hopefully they're going to step up and start mustering people as well, get more and more people onto the street, make it more visible. It's all, the press are ignoring it. You know yourself, Leslie Redout and her column about the BBC ignoring these marches and rallies. And so
certainly they've been appearing, or the SNP have been doing a lot of roadshows, a lot of meetings. And
yes, they've got the city halls going to go again. Yeah. What they really need to do is do these things in football stadiums. They'll fill the places. They will fill the places. They need bigger and bigger venues for these things, and they have to become more loud and more active. The mandate, this is a a bone of contention. We hear it a lot. Use the mandate. Use the mandate. Use the mandate. Demands to use the mandate. Now, the mandate isn't alive at the moment. SNP supporters right across Scotland understand that the mandate's no live at the moment. The wording of the manifesto which gave us the so-called mandate was quite clear. A change in circumstances, like Scotland being taken out of the EU against its will. Unless something's changed in the last 20 minutes, Scotland's still in the EU. I've heard people say, but what about the power grab? No, happened. You know, what about the insults that we're getting through Westminster? They've always insulted us. It's just not happened. At the moment, the mandate is on the table. It is there, but it's no live and it's no active, and it won't be live and it won't be active until there has been a major change of circumstances. Now, I was talking to my friend David before I come round to you this afternoon, and David pointed out that there has been a change in circumstances now with the prorogation of Parliament and our MPs being denied the right to represent the
constituencies.
Well, actually, until a judgment's made in the Supreme Court, that hasn't happened either, you know. The Scottish courts have said it's illegal. If the MPs want, they can go back and sit. If the government doesn't show up, hey-ho. You know, we had the Speaker and a vote in the Commons last year where the government abstained and the opposition won. Theresa May at the time. And the government were claiming they were going to ignore it because the vote wasn't valid because they weren't there to vote on it. And as the Speaker pointed out, you know, you had a franchise. It's not your fault you didn't use it. Simple as that. And that's going to be the same and all if we have another independence referendum and the unionists don't show up to vote. Well, that's tough. They had a franchise. The will of the people will stand. And that goes back to where we were talking about England and Wales voting to leave the EU. And so they should. But there was no reason for Scotland and Ireland to join, Northern Ireland to join them. There were ways, there are mechanisms to do that. So where the independence movement is at the moment as we're growing, we are growing daily. The SNP are putting on members as well again. You know, it had stabilised at about 120,000. They've started to take on members again because people are no liking what they're seeing. But the mandate itself won't be alive until we have a Brexit of some sort or we have something monumental. Maybe even jailing a Prime Minister. I don't know. But until we have something monumental, it could even be Tuesday next week if the Supreme Court overturns the Court of Session, which, of course, it doesn't have the jurisdiction to do. It doesn't have the competence to do under the Treaty of Union. So that would be a change of circumstance. That would be a monumental change of circumstance, and then the mandate would go live. But up until something changes, because I go to work every day, you know. You and I go about our lives every day. I haven't noticed anything different. We know that difference coming down the line. It's just not arrived yet. But the movement itself is flourishing, which is a great thing. I mean, we were Perth at the weekend there. What a lot of fun that was. Superb fun. Masses of people. Great speeches. And the political wing is starting to get more active in the movement itself. So that's great. We're just waiting on something happening so that we can go live on this mandate.
How do you feel that we can turn the people who are active into activists insofar as not just going for a walk, but also talking to people? Because we have constantly the messages out there, speak to your friends, speak to your family, speak to your workmates.
You've heard me say that. You know, speak to your friends, speak to your family, make them aware. Make them aware of the propaganda. Make them aware of the differences in the constitutional arrangements. Make them aware of the probable problems that are coming down the line. And make them aware of the fact that we don't actually have to be in this situation. Scotland has an escape route. Northern Ireland has an escape route. Oh, sorry, England. Your supreme ruler didn't give you an escape route. Sorry, Wales. You were gifted to England as a marriage dowry, I believe so. Your supreme ruler hasn't he gave you an escape route either? You know, I mean, you will have the opportunity to reverse the decisions that you made in that last referendum, probably sooner rather than later, England and Wales. But Scotland and Northern Ireland don't have to put up with us. We have escape routes. They have the Good Friday Agreement, and they have the right to have a border poll and a change of circumstances, and a change, a material change of a position of the people in Northern Ireland. They have that legal right. Scotland has its claim of right, and it has its legal right. I feel sorry for the people of Wales. I really do. Their independence movement has grown and grown and grown, but they don't have the legal right. They don't have a legal right. So that's going to be worth watching.
Yeah, certainly will, because it's been an ever-increasing number of people in marches around the Principality.
Yes, there has been. All this pressure on Westminster and all this pressure on the broken system that we have at the moment, something's going to give.
There's also been an increase in support for Plaid, though.
Yep.
I was disappointed that they didn't stand for the mid-powers.
I think that was a shocking decision. But, I mean, you could understand why they took that decision, because the Tories would have won it if they split the Lib Dem vote, which was a... In fact, the Lib Dems took that seat.
Yes.
That was a shocking decision, but it was a decision that had to be made.
How do you feel in relation to a Scottish... we're talking about a snap general election, the pressure on seats within Scotland. Obviously, they've been talking about the potential of wiping out the Tories completely, but there are some areas where that might be difficult to obtain, for example, for the SNP. And
well,
it's
I think
always
the,
going to be the
same
borders
message. In the northeast are always going to be a problem, always.
But I think it's always going to now. I think every election going forward now, after the mistake made of 2017, every election is actually going to be a referendum.
Yes.
And so there's going to be
I really believe that Nicola Sturgeon in this next general election, which is only a couple of months away, maximally a couple of months away, I believe that Nicola Sturgeon will remove the need for a change in circumstance. I think that term has got to be thrown out the window, because as I say, that need for change of circumstance has actually held us back, because the mandate doesn't go live until we have a change in circumstances. So I believe that when they run for this next day election in probably November, what they will say is, elect us and we will give you that referendum. No ifs, no buts, no need for change of circumstance, no need to be dragged out the EU, nothing. It'll be a case of, this is a referendum on having a referendum.
Yeah.
Now, I've also heard, we're talking about... McLenny and wanting to make it a poll on independence itself. Unless something changes and the SNP's approach and their approach is to have a referendum, then that's a non-starter. That would only happen, and there would only be a declaration of independence on that particular election if Westminster is stupid enough then to say to the Scottish people, you're not having a referendum. We have to understand what Section 30 is all about. Section 30 was inserted into the 1998 Scotland Act because Lord Cooper pointed it out to Tony Blair that if the Scottish Parliament decides to come together on any issue, let's say immigration, if all four parties in that Scottish Parliament decide that they want control of immigration, they only have to come together, have a vote on it and pass a law on it, and it would stand. So Section 30 was actually put in to allow Westminster to remove or curtail the powers of the Scottish Parliament. Now, the reason why Alex Salmond went for a Section 30 order was because he wanted to put the precedence in law that a referendum as a way for independence and set a precedence. So the actual important part of that section, that request for a Section 30 order or agreement on a Section 30 order, was nothing really to do with the Section 30. It had to do with the Edinburgh Agreement. The Edinburgh Agreement set the precedence of the law. Now, fast forward to Nicola Sturgeon and the elections and referenda bill. So we've got a precedence in Scots law. We're about to put an elections and referenda bill into Scots law, which will control the rules for referenda and control the rules for elections here in Scotland. And that will be enshrined in Scots law as well. And as we spoke about, there's no court in the land can overturn it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so once that makes its way through the Scottish Parliament, then, you know, the need for a Section 30 order disappears. I have a suspicion that once that bill goes through, there'll be a referendum right away on a different subject.
Yeah,
I would imagine it will be on assisted dying.
Really?
Yes, I really do think so. Uh-huh. It may not be, but I really expect there will be a rapid... Yeah. I really believe there will be a rapid referendum in order to embed that law, that bill in law.
Right.
That it had been used, it is legal, it does function, it's no challengeable by Westminster or any court in the United Kingdom. I think that's how it will go. And then... when they keep saying naughtier for a referendum next October, when she says she wants, I should just say, sorry, I'm having it. And we're going to have that referendum. And if you want to challenge the outcome of that referendum, we'll see you in the international courts, never mind the Supreme Court.
Correct.
But even if they want to challenge it in the Supreme Court, fair enough, the Supreme Court will just throw it at the window anyway. Yeah. They'll just take one look at it and do what they did with the AXA law.
Yeah. No jurisdiction.
No jurisdiction.
Yeah.
We have no competence. What we said at the beginning of the Court of Sessions, a initial challenge to the prorogation of Parliament was very, very important. Now, what was said by the representative in QC of the 79 parliamentarians, and this is the important part, what was said is, this is not a royal court. English law has no jurisdiction here. This is Scots law. We know nothing of English law. Scots law is the law of this land and this kingdom. And that was very important to be said.
Very.
That was very important to be said, you know. And the important part of it was that this is no royal court. This court was set up by an act of the Scottish Parliament. And it is enabled by the Scottish people, the sovereign people of Scotland. That's the important part of what that man said. It was very deliberate when they opened that case with that. You know, I mean, it was widely displayed over the internet. I noticed that the BBC, STV and everybody else was very quiet about it. But I mean, the alternative media had that splashed everywhere. There was memes all over, they were all over Twitter, they were all over Facebook, they were Snapchat, no doubt, and whatever else is out there. That would have been in there, because that's very important to point out.
It doesn't do the media any favours not to give it publicity to inform and educate.
There will be a reckoning. There will be a reckoning with the media. There really will. I feel sorry for the people of England, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland, Great Britain, if you like, with the media that we have. Mm. It's tightly controlled by the elite.
Yeah.
And particularly the Conservative elite. You know, if we have a look at the Telegraph, the Animal, the Bartley Brothers, you know, Murdoch. You know, I mean... I think there's about five or six people own the whole media. And the BBC weren't happy with putting their propaganda out through their television and radio network and their online network. They've actually been embedding people in local newspapers. It's one of the things that people don't realise that the BBC are sponsoring, because they were attacked on the fact that their output was so huge that local papers like the Airdrie Advertiser or the Courier or all these things were actually dying. So the BBC said, okay then, what we'll do is we'll send in our reporters and we'll help you finance these papers. They weren't doing that out of an act of kindness. They were wanting to embed their agents in every single news outlet that they could get their grubby little paws into. And they could then be in control, especially if they're part financing.
Yeah.
Then they could be in control of the output, which is another problem facing the independence movement. It takes us back to where we are, where the independence movement is. The media is our biggest enemy. They are not friends of the Scottish people. I mean, Daily Record, The Herald, they're all owned outside Scotland.
Yeah.
I mean, I think DC Thompson's the only one in Scotland. Yeah. And their newspapers are just comics anyway. They'd as well be the Beano and the Dandy. I mean, if that was any mere unionist, they would be flying a salt, they would be flying a Union Jack above DC Thompson and Dundee, you know what I mean? But if you take the courier network right up the east coast of Scotland, because that's where it is, that's where it's strongest, but that is also where the strongest unionist vote is, which is quite surprising because you'd expect it to be here in the west.
Yeah.
You would expect it to be where the Orange Order is. You'd expect it to be where the sectarianism is, but it's no. The hotbed of conservatism is on the other side of the country, in the east. And that's where DC Thompson has his claws into everything. You know, the couriers right up that east coast and all the way through the Highlands.
Yeah.
And that's where they're getting their media. That's who owns all the local papers up there. You know, it's DC Thompson.
Must be a thorn in the side having Dundee as a yes, I see then.
An absolute thorn in the side. But once again, but it shows you the power of the ownership of the papers, because they employ a lot of people. You know? Mm-hmm. So you'll find that the unionists vote in Dundee. A huge amount of them working for DC Thompson. It's all relevant to where the independence movement is now, because we have seen a wee bit of shift in the Daily Record, I have to say. You know?
Probably started by the drop in the... Because I think it's only the National that's actually putting the readership numbers on. Everybody else has been losing.
Well, the thing about the National is its actual print paper is no doing that great. But I subscribe through the internet.
Same here.
Everybody's getting their news through the internet. I mean, I've gave up my subscription to the Times, which was a mistake, because the great thing about the Times is it's a franchise. You get the New York Times, you know, you get the Times and you get the Financial Times. It's all part of a network. They're not owned by the same people, but they're networked. It's a very clever outlet. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I was getting the Financial Times and all that through subscription to the Times. You know, you were getting... New York Times, it's all coming, you know, because these newspapers have networked. They've realised that they've all got the same name. Doesn't matter, they're owned by different people. Let's exploit that worldwide, and they've done really well with it. I mean, the Times network is huge, yet they're all individual. You know, it's I believe the Financial Times is now owned in Japan. It's a Japanese company that owns it. So they're not exactly friendly to the British state at the moment. And we see that in the Financial Times output. I mean, they are scalping Westminster big style. They really are whacking at any Westminster.
Well, getting back to Westminster a second, just to finish off, David. If there is a snap general election, the members of SNP, Labour, Tory, Lib Dems, what do you think should happen as far
this
as...
This is the bit that Tommy Sheridan's got absolutely right. Doesn't matter what political party you support normally. It doesn't matter what your actual politics is, whether you're actually green, whether you're a hard lefter like Solidarity or the Scottish Socialist Movement or the Scottish Republican Socialists. It doesn't matter which of these, or even Labour supporters.
Yeah. Well, people have no interest.
The biggest thing, I've said this before, and it was made clear in Dumfries, the biggest movement towards Scottish independence is actually in the Scottish Tory Party. You know, I mean, if you go into their Facebook page, yes, they do have a Facebook page, the membership in Scottish Tories for independence Facebook page has been climbing rapidly. You know, so it doesn't matter which of these parties that you actually support. Tommy Sheridan's got this right. Give your vote to the SNP. The best message that we can give Westminster is by removing the Labour Party and the Conservatives from Scottish politics.
Because it's the point I've spoken about, and my feelings are that so many people have not looked further than a referendum. I'm looking post-referendum, and that every single person will have a voice of whether they have a Tory outlook, whether they have a Lib Dem outlook, a Labour outlook, or an SNP outlook.
I don't expect the SNP to survive any longer than 10 years after independence, because the SNP is such a broad church. There are left-wingers, there are right-wingers, there are centrists. And these people will naturally split and go into their own directions. Yeah. Whatever political parties rise...
So to try and get the message across now to people who are undecided that, you know, we will make our own future when we're independent. We'll decide then what we're going to do. That, you know, voting no just now because, oh, you don't agree in the SNP's policy or the Greens' policy.
I don't know what they will call the personalities. Parties. I don't know it's what crazy. Political parties will rise post-independence. None of us do. The principles will be the same, no matter what they call them. They'll be socialists, they'll be centrists, they'll be right-wingers, they'll be conservatives. What they call their parties after independence, whether they keep the name Labour, whether they keep the name Conservative.
And they'll rise or fall on basis of the manifesto and keeping the promise on the manifesto.
That's correct. I mean, that's one thing that people don't get to know because of the media that we have in Scotland is that actually the SNP have done really well in keeping to their manifesto commitments. Mm-hmm. Nothing's perfect. But if we have a look across the public services that are devolved and are within the actual remit of the Scottish Parliament, they are manifestly better than in any other part of the Great Britain. I mean, I was recently down in Bristol with a friend of mine, David Milligan, and while we were down there, we were actually putting the sepsis post out a couple of days ago about this. While we were down there, David was really ill. Now, I can't remember what the name of the place was. I think it was Ainsworth or something like that. I can't remember the suburb we were in. But the local hospital was just across the road, and I thought, he's in a bad way. I'm going to go and check this hospital out while he's sleeping, and when he wakes up, I'm going to take him to that hospital, and I'm going to wake him up and take him to that hospital. I went across to that hospital and took one look at it and went, nah, sorry. I put him in the motor and drove him 500 miles up the road to go to a hospital.
Wow.
I mean, it was Victorian. The paint was falling off the walls. There were cigarette butts in the plant pots inside the hospital. The place was minging. Good Scottish word, the place was extremely dirty. I mean, it looked as if it hadn't seen a cleaner for weeks. You know, there was visible dust everywhere. The plants that were still alive in these plant pots had dust on the leaves. I just took one look at the place and I thought, there's something no right here. And I went, and I would need to attain them A&E. I'm afraid the A&E stats down there are no great. I think being seen within 4 hours is somewhere around about 80%, maybe less, 76%.
Yeah.
I think it was 76 in the last set of figures that came out. So there's every chance that I would attain them into that hospital where the chances of picking up their infection were huge because the place was minging. And he would have waited 4 or 5 hours. In 4 or 5 hours, I could have had him in the Southern General in a nice Queen hospital, brand new hospital. Or if need be, I could have got over the border in 3 hours and taken him to Dumfries and Galloway Border Hospital, which is a brand new hospital, fantastic facility. We had some friends up for Newcastle visiting. We've got a niece that lives in Gala Shields, and one of the kids had a wee scrape of the knee. We scrape in the yard, I slap some TCP on it like we did in the old days and put a wee plaster on it. But no, I went to the hospital. And the people were gobsmacked. They couldn't believe how modern the facilities were compared to the main general hospital down there in Newcastle.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right, I'm saying Newcastle, it wasn't Newcastle, it was Redcar they came from.
Yeah.
You know, my wife's family, a lot of them moved to Redcar. Big steel industry and that, you know.
Similar to Colby and that.
Yeah, and they're off of South Lanarkshire, which was a big steel area, of course, at the time as well.
Yeah.
So, I say they were up in Gala Shields, nip along the road to the... They couldn't believe the facilities compared to what they had in the rain area.
Yeah.
You know, how modern it was, how clean it was, how quickly they were dealt with. And I think they were about 45 minutes for you entering the building, leaving the building. Yeah,
well, I've had similar experiences myself. Fantastic.
With some TCP and a plaster put in the veins.
If anyone was to be commending the Scottish Health Service, it would definitely be me from my experience over the last few years of that. You know, it's until you have a personal experience that you then appreciate just how painful the unionist media or the unionist politicians when they're slagging off our Scottish Health Service. You know. Okay, there's always going to be an odd error here and there, or there could be improvements on services. That's always going to be the case.
Well, last year, Ray, it was shocking. The BBC and STV are actually putting it on Twitter looking for bad stories.
Yeah. Well, Lib Dems are doing it just now. They're doing a national survey, posting out and asking for any bad experiences. So they're actually shopping for bad stories.
I mean, I was talking about Cole Key last week. Do you know Cole Key was actually putting shouts out for right wingers to phone her on the Brexit thing last Tuesday? She was actually, I mean, she asked for John to Aberdeen to give her a call, and then the researcher says, "Hey, that's John on the phone."
Yeah,
a right wing conservative nutter.
Yeah,
and she's actually asking for it.
Yeah,
I mean, so the independence movement and where we're at the moment, the media is still our enemy. The press is not our friends. They are our biggest obstacle. And, of course, that gets back to the alternative media and the need for these podcasts and things like that.
Well, thank you very much indeed for taking part in this, David. It's been great, and it's been also very educational. I'm sure listeners will have been hanging on so many of your words and enlightenment of...
They know all this stuff. The Scottish voters since 2012 are savvy. They're no silly.
Oh, I know that, but there's some of the inner details of the Constitution, for example, the things I've learned.
But these people, our listeners know that. The independence movement, yourself, you know, all the different branches of the independence movement, these people are well savvy. What they will enjoy is just enjoy the podcast and you and I sitting discussing these things. Because, of course, as the alternative media, they're getting the discussion that they want to hear from you and I. And, of course, they're getting some information thrown in along the way.
Yeah, and to take notice of this and to bear it in mind when they're having a chat with someone.
Yeah, and the other thing is, they are not going to hear this in the mainstream media.
No.
And that's where the power of alternative media is imperative.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you for inviting me along to your lovely house and a nice cup of coffee or two.
Thanks very much indeed, David. All the best.
Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime on Indie Live Radio. Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime on Indie Live Radio.